Hey, Kate.
Hi, Orla, how are you?
Good, you're looking good in Zoom.
So are you.
The reason we are Zooming is because we can't meet up this week, but we want to keep the podcast on a roll. So we said we'd do a quick little recap and intro to this week's We Stand episode. So last week was excellent, Kate. How are you feeling after it?
I'm feeling really, really good. I was speaking to a journalist there the other day about it. There's going to be write-ups, which is great. I know that I go to a funny place after we publish, and you're very supportive. And it's just, if I go to a funny place and it's my story, I can't imagine, or I can kind of imagine really what other people listening to it might be experiencing, especially if they're sort of looking at their own trauma. So I suppose we all have to mind ourselves a bit, you know? And it's all, and keep going and keep talking and keep speaking out about it. We've got loads of messages again. It's been really amazing. The support online has been fantastic too. Like so many people getting on board and tweeting about it. And that's always, you know, a positive for us, isn't it, Orla?
Yeah. And I suppose the feedback that I've been getting, Kate, is that, you know, that it's a hard listen, but so important.
Yeah.
And really people just a huge admiration for yourself, which is, I know you, any Irish person doesn't take with open arms, but there is massive support and admiration out there for you. And I think that
I kind of want to throw the laptop out the window now and say thanks pennies. know?
Yeah, I can see it in you, but just take it. And you
well,
know,
in turn you should take it, because I'm getting people going, who is Orla? She's brilliant. She comes in and has the tone, and you represent the listener. You know, that point where you can't breathe at times, you are that person. So yeah. I think so far we're kind of doing a good job.
We are doing a good job, but we need to carry on, because it's so important to get this out there and to get voices heard. And on that note, I suppose it leads us nicely onto that today's episode is a chat with your beautiful mother.
It is. And we went to Dunleary, where my mum lives, a few weeks ago, and socially distanced, sat in her sitting room. The only beings that were not socially distanced are my mum's dogs, Toby and Archie, who you will hear regularly through the next 40-something minutes. And Orla, yeah, we decided, didn't we, that we know it's a long chat, but it's worthwhile listening to. And we decided to let it run through without any breaks, simply because it's just very human.
Guys, there's great supports out there if you do need to talk to somebody, and Kate has some numbers there for you.
I do. So last week we spoke about CARI Adult Services. They look after retrospective abuse, and they're very, very good. So you can contact them on the website www.cari.ie. And also the Rape Crisis Centre, they also handle retrospective abuse cases. And you can call them 1-800-77-8888. That phone line is open 24 hours. And just something to say as well, if you're in a horrible situation where you suspect that maybe a child is in danger or at risk, please do contact TUSLA, Child Protection Services. You know, you're better off making that call and being wrong than never making that call but still being right about it, okay?
And guys, so, if you want to drop us a line at any stage just to give us feedback or just to share some words with us, it's we.stand@gmail.com. So we'll get on with it. Kate and I have arrived at Mary's house, and she's very kindly made me the biggest cup of tea known to mankind in a beautiful Manchester United mug. Thank you so much for having us in your home. This is amazing. And to meet your two beautiful dogs.
That you can hear very clearly on
yes,
the audio.
There's nothing untoward going on here. It's just the dogs want their say as well. And I suppose again, and I'd like to say thanks a million for inviting a stranger into your house as well, Mary, because it's I've been working with Kate since COVID started on her story, and obviously you know better than anybody how difficult it is to open up about these things, and Kate has been so brave and kind in sharing her experiences. And I think for both Kate and I, what we want to bring to this podcast series is all the voices that are in Kate's story, and that includes yours. Tell me, what kind of a child was she? Was she a funny little one?
She was very intelligent. She picked up on reading and all that very, very quickly and very early and loved books then. She read and read and read. So that was Kate, and very independent.
Have you listened to the podcast?
I have.
Okay, yeah. It's good. It's anybody that's listened to it, any of my friends have just said that it's like, the content is obviously shocking, but the way it's discussed is a very gentle a gentle conversation. And one thing that we do discuss in it is the time that Kate's friend Jenny gave her a bit of an ultimation. You either tell your mum or I'll tell my mum. That must have been really shocking moment for you when Kate came in and told you what had been going on.
Yes, it was absolutely, I don't know, there are no words to describe it, because it happened to be Christmas night, and it was only recently as Kate was going over things, then I was preoccupied because Rory had hurt his knee or cut his knee or something, and you know, like the way another child would come in to say, like, yeah, just a minute, or you're doing whatever. But when she said to me, like, you know, I honestly can't remember her exact words, granddad has been, I can't remember what she said to me. It's awful. But
I don't think it's awful, Mum. I think that you're not supposed to remember something.
It's like, what do you mean? And then Kate immediately starts to backtrack. He just tried to kiss me, I think it was, something like that. And I was like, what do you mean? And immediately it was like as if, oh no, go back, I don't want to talk about it. And then as things started to dawn on me, what she might possibly be saying, I thought, oh God, because she was due to go down, her father collecting her the next morning and taking her down to visit the grandparents. And I didn't get a wink of sleep all night. And but this is where, again, where Kate was ahead of herself in rage, you could discuss things with her, if you like. And because she said to me she didn't want me to say to her dad. And I'm in a quandary, like, what can I do? I can't let a 12-year-old off without saying something. And the next morning I said to Kate when she got up, and I put it to her that, like, I had to tell her father, because I can't let her go without him being told to keep an extra eye out, or I can't let her go. And she didn't want it, but I was able to, I put it to her then, I put it back on me that I'd get into trouble if I, like, and I knew she wouldn't like that. So, you know, when you say that, it's like the mum is going to get into trouble, it's not whatever. So she accepted that. And then the difficulty of how to tell her dad, because, I mean, like, we were separated and all that, but that's neither here nor there in that regard, is telling another person that their father had done something that's, and I didn't even know what he'd done, because Kate was backtracking and trying to make it little of it then, you know, that this was, it was only something and nothing, and it was, you know, whatever. So then, of course, there's a problem, like, he didn't want to hear, and I had to give him an ultimatum to come into the house so that I can tell him, or Kate's not going, and he just wants to row about it. And then I said it to him. And I said, like, and also that Kate had asked for you not to talk to her about it. Now, in life as we know it, and life, you, I don't know if you know, like, separated people and all that, of course it could be a conspiracy. Imagine, like, telling, you know, but she doesn't want to talk about it, so in other words, you know, it could be something that I was making up, whatever, which she subsequently...
I don't know, I can't remember that, that's mad, because it would make sense that I would have gone, I don't want to talk to dad about it, because I was terrified.
Yeah, and, but then her aunt went and took her for a walk and seemingly said to her, has your mother told you to say this? And that was immediately at the end of the journey when they went on. But I can see how, because if it was said to me, and, like, you know, that, because people are, you know, can be like that. And it's terrible because the child is caught then in the middle, in a bind between, like, dealing with going down to where this man lives and then dealing with the fact that her parents were at odds. There's just so many things. And it's when they actually drove away, just around the corner, the car pulled out of sight, and I thought, oh Jesus, I don't think I should have let her go. What am I to do? Because Kate wanted to go. She insisted. And it was Stephen's day, and then I rang Guy Frank, who had been my solicitor, and he's a lovely, lovely man, and apologised to him for ringing on Stephen's day, but I said, I need to know, what should I have done? And explained to him, and I said, like, she's gone now. And he said, well, as soon as she comes back, make an appointment to go into Children's Hospital, to whatever section it was there, like, to have an assessment or whatever. But I mean, it's just, I hadn't slept the night before. I was wound up all that day. I was thinking, I couldn't make any phone calls to anyone. There was no mobiles then, not that that would have mattered, but who do I ring to see that she's all right? How do I know? We're ringing her grandparents' house, where the problem is. And you just, it just, it sounds stupid. And I mean, it's long years after now, and I think, like, what do you do? You just, I didn't even have a chance to talk to Kate about anything. Excuse me. But Kate clammed up anyway, and Kate wouldn't talk. So even if I had had an extra few days, I don't know what would have happened, because she was so out to, you know, because she was daddy's girl, and, you know, not to rock the boat. So they were only staying one night, which was at least something. And
I thought it was two.
No, it was just the one.
I was sure it was two nights. It's funny, that's in my head, that it was two nights.
No, it was one night.
Yeah.
And so when he came back the next day, I rang Crumlin and made an appointment to go for Kate, because, like, with all of us, we know, like, what's why a teacher in school will know there's something different about your child than the parent does, because, you know, they relate. And likewise, so, but Kate, you know, went basically kicking and screaming against the whole idea. Didn't want to talk to anyone. Just wanted it all, like, to. And I reckon she wouldn't have told me, only that Jenny had given her that ultimatum.
Do you recall Jenny's mum calling you?
No.
Okay, wow.
No, don't. And it's only last week that Kate mentioned that, and I thought, I don't remember that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember. Because my mind is racing. It's like, what to do? Do you know, it's I was going through so much aggression, I suppose, with in the marriage breakup. I mean, this was the same year.
The year? No, it's the year after. Like, it's only 12 or 13 months after. You broke up after Rory was born, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, but were you going through, like, proper legal divorce?
It hadn't got to legalities okay. at that
was
stage.
Divorce, it was illegal. You couldn't get divorced then. You were legally separated, I think, at that stage.
No, just separated.
Yeah, and we were living in the park.
Yeah.
So we'd lived in two houses since my parents put up.
Yeah.
And, like, at that stage, so I was still in primary school, in sixth class, in the middle of sixth class. And, I remember, because I've spoken about this on the pilot episode of telling you, but it's like, when we chatted last week, there was other things that it's like stuff, because it's my memory and I'm a kid in my memory, and then at the same time I feel like I'm an adult in my brain. Do you know what I mean? It's all the same thing. But that clamming up and not being able to speak was just, and then I just wanted it to stop, go away. I just wanted to deny all existence, and then I just kept getting angry because I couldn't control it, because it was beyond my control. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, it was like, it was difficult.
And did you speak with Kate's dad when he dropped her back?
No.
When he dropped the three of them back?
No. He wouldn't be the type that would talk. plus the fact that he wasn't driving, he had injured his ankle and he was in a cast, so his sister and husband were doing the driving. So he would have just dropped them off. He's the type of controlling person anyway, so that, because even prior to when that happened, if he was bringing the children back, he'd kind of run up to the door and kind of like, wait there, bring me in. But I wouldn't wait. I mean, Rory was only little anyway. But it would be just get them out, get them in and be gone, you know. He wouldn't, no, he would not want to discuss or talk or anything about anything like that. And
so you got Kate to go to Crumlin screaming.
She was totally against it, and I didn't hold out any hope about anything. And I thought, what now, what's going to happen? Kate won't, so where do we go from here, and what happens, like, on both on a kind of a family footing with you know, her dad's family, and on a day-to-day footing of legalities, without it being legalities, about, like, if something happened, what then? And then it's all just left abeyance. And to my surprise, I think she was in with the people in Crumlin for about two and a half hours, and they came out and they said to me, yes, we can confirm that abuse has taken place. Never forget those words. And I was... I was relieved, because it was only 2 hours, and Kate had said whatever she'd said had convinced them, as opposed to sitting there and trying to not say anything,
so,
or trying
to... So the opposite to my memory. I've never heard that. We can confirm abuse has taken place. I remember sitting there, seeing your reflection through that fake glass or fake window, and absolutely just shutting up, and just like, and then she tried to give me a doll. And sure, I hated dolls, and I was just like, do you know, like, and then it was to show me where he was, you know, and I did do that bit, but I felt like I couldn't, I felt for years, I almost feel still angry with me in that room, because I couldn't say anything. I feel like I let myself down in it, do you know? But it's interesting to hear, it's amazing for me to hear you say, we can confirm abuse happened. I mean, something must have confirmed, because there was a Garda investigation, but like, that's kind of mad.
Well, it's so contradictory, like, that I felt the relief that they could do that, and yet relief to hear that my daughter had been abused. Of course you're not relieved to hear that, but relief that they could acknowledge it, or that, and now something can be done. That wasn't obviously the overriding thing, but with Kate going in and how stubborn she could be.
And you know, what, like, you watch shows now, TV shows and this and that, and they're like, if the child, if it's a minor, they can't be in there without a parent.
Yeah.
Or
yeah. What was, do you recall, and I know this is, it's so difficult for I both of you to go back, and because it's so long ago, but do you recall, was there that conversation about, go, you know, we're going to take your daughter away into a room with strangers, and you're going to be looking at, by all descriptions, a very poor two-way window mirror thing. Do you recall anything?
No, there wasn't. I couldn't see anything. Did you just take me?
What room was I in then? Because there was another room where they brought me into, and I could see your silhouette, and I could see a man's silhouette beside you. Was it maybe the second time we went to Crumlin, not the first?
Might have been.
Then I can't remember the first time in Crumlin. And that's mad.
That's incredible.
Yeah, because then it's like, because the memory I have is this window, it's to my right. I'm sitting on this couch, and it's ages before someone comes into me, and you know, there's dolls and stuff around, and then I remember looking over, and I'm like, I can see that's my mum, you know, and just, you know, not that I didn't want to talk in front of mum, just it was just there watching me, and sure, that was a massive trigger for me anyway, because if adults are being untrustworthy, and I've already had to deal with, I'm like, well, what's real, do you know what I mean? And I just, wherever I went to in my head.
It's just a very difficult situation as to what to do, what's the best thing to do. I don't know that it would have been a good thing for me to have gone in with you. At the same time, you kind of, it's like when to the car driving around the corner, even though you were with your father, it's kind of like, oh, Jesus. And it's the same thing like that, like, because it's strangers. and you know your own child best, or at least you think you do. But then I don't know that you'd have said anything if I'd been there. So it's just oh so difficult. And that's why, like, I just couldn't believe it. I thought they were going to come out after whatever hours or whatever time and say, like, no, there's nothing, we can't take it any further, there's nothing. And I couldn't believe it. It was like,
and where did it go from there? To did they prepare of you, hold on now, sorry to jump back, for Kate, did Kate go back to Crumlin again? Were there other meetings?
Yes, excuse me, with that one they said they'd want her to come back to have, now that they could say or whatever, that they would have a longer meeting, discussion, I can't remember what word they used. And after that they said, right, we have to talk to her father. Stop it, Doug. And okay, so they contacted him, and then the weeks went by, the months went by, and I remember ringing, say, like, what's happening? There's nothing happening. And they said, oh, we're still waiting to hear from her dad. So I said, what, have you written him? Yeah, it was all of that. So then another few months went by, and it's the same thing. And I think my patience held out for about a year. And I rang them, and no, they still hadn't. And I said, right, I want the file. You're confirming that abuse has taken place. There's a year gone already. And I can tell you categorically that her dad is not going to make contact with you. He's not going to come in and talk to you. So therefore, what? You hold on to the file for the rest of her life? I said, I want it now. I can't remember what I threatened. Whether I said I'm going to go to the papers or I'm going to go to somebody, you know, to highlight the fact. So they sent me, they sent forward the file then to the guards. And a wonderful woman who was in Cabinteely at the time came and interviewed Kate, interviewed me, wanted to know what other family members there were and were the children. So she did that because there's two sister-in-laws, his daughters, and they had children. And she interviewed them.
Kate, do you recall, or maybe Mary, you can fill in, did Kate see her dad in that year when he was refusing to, or when he wasn't answering any of the calls or the letters that were asked of him to come in to be interviewed?
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either, because it went in waves, where there was a whole thing where we had supervised access with my dad in his other sister's house. And
sorry, was that supervised access due to the separation?
I don't know. I can't recall exactly. All I know is we didn't see him for a while. And I think it was in and around that time, because I didn't see any of my dad's family after that point until I was 31. Like, that's it. They were gone. Like, I saw my dad's youngest sister, but she stood kind of with me and mum. So she got disowned. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of like, but yet it was her house that we had supervised access with him. But I'm funny on the dates on that. I think I'm still under 15, so probably didn't see him for a bit.
It's just funny, things that you don't think about now that you ask. I think, like, I don't know.
And there's a squirrel outside. retrospectively, when after Kate had disclosed to you, did at any stages things come into your head? Oh, that was strange. An interaction between Kate and her grandfather. Oh,
no, this is the thing. And even now, just as I think, how on earth did I not notice? How on earth? And I feel so stupid about that, because see, I didn't have any family kind of situation. I had no family here, and I, again, the guilt that I feel, because I used to often say, Will we go down to Waterford, see your parents? And it was my suggestion, because I loved to think that, well, there was this family unit that I was, albeit an in-law, but it was, you know, there was parents and siblings. And to go down, and then, you know, Kate's grandfather appeared to be the typical lovely older man, lie on the floor, let the kids pull his hair, he'd make fun, put out his dentures, you know, that type of thing. And never for one moment did. And like, what does that say about me?
Yeah, but you know? Mum, I mean, like, because we talked about this before, like, Grandad was not exactly a nice man in general, as in he was all charming, but like, he used to feel you up.
Yeah, well, that was, well, I suppose, if you know, it was only really starting to get highlighted on radio or television about abuse, various different forms of abuse. And I do, you know, recall when they might visit us, and, you know, and Niall's father would be, "Hello, darling," and immediately grope me. The first time, I just couldn't believe it. You're so taken aback. And therefore, I suppose in my head, you know, looking back, and it's not an excuse, I'm trying to, because I like to analyse and try and get answers for myself and think, like, well, if he was interested in just groping me as a grown woman, never would have thought, like, well, he's interested in a child, my child. And it was, I did say to my husband after they left, I did say to him any time that they were coming, they're going to be in contact with them again or meeting them, "You stay with me. You do not leave me alone. And if it's in the house and I go into the kitchen to put on the kettle or cook a meal or something, and then your dad disappears, you come immediately. You see where I laid down the law in that way and said to him, you've got to come and see where he is." Like, imagine a woman having to say that to her husband.
So it wasn't like he wasn't just copping a feel when he hugged you. He would get you alone. He would love to get you alone.
Try, yeah. Mm.
I witnessed it. Like, I specifically remember arriving to Waterford and arriving at the door, and it was always like Granny and Grandad, and it was, "Hello, everyone," you know, the usual, like, "You're coming home" or whatever. Oh. And I'd always watch, because he'd always eyeball me first. Like, no matter what, he'd have looked at me, but he'd go for Mum and he would be hugging her, but I'd see his hand. And I don't know if I processed it properly back then, but I know I was just like, well, that's what he does. Do you know what I mean? Oh. And it's that thing where women almost have to be, like, you're just silenced, you're oppressed by it. And it's like, we have all experienced, you know, as adults, we've experienced behaviour that's like that. Or, do you know what I mean? Abuse of different forms or sexual, like, assault.
Yeah,
like,
but the power that you automatically give away, obviously from a child or an adult, the power is taken from you or you give it away, because immediately you're thinking, oh, I don't want to cause hurt to anyone. Nowadays, I feel like I just bent someone, you know. But when it happens to you first and it's your husband's father and everyone's there and, you know, and there could be other siblings around, you kind of think, oh, shit, you know.
But that just tells you how much he thought he could get away with it.
Yeah.
Like, he was obvious. And, I mean, I've spoken about in the pilot, I spoke about publicly, you know, he would abuse me in public. He would abuse me with other people. They wouldn't know what they're seeing, because I'm just like, they can't see where his hands have gone. But he would do, like, you know, Tremor and on the bumper cars, he would abuse me, do you know? And at family christening, he was abusing me, and I'm sitting, I think, "Mum, you're probably 2 feet away from me. Dad's in the kitchen." Do you know what I mean? And everyone's there and I'm just sitting there. Like, that's how much he thought he could get away with it. And then he's feeling you up, and he was always this ladies' man, and their charisma and all this sort of stuff, you know, which has always been really difficult for me, because I would be described as being a bit charismatic, or, you know, like, you know, you walk into a room and I'll be bubbly or whatever, do you know what I mean? And that, my dad would be a bit similar, I think, in, like, you know, people, I don't think he's smiley the way I've had to justify this, but it's like, for a long time as a kid and as a teenager, I'd be like, oh my god, I'm like them. Does that make me an abuser? Am I an abuser? Do you know what I mean? And that's the fear going through my own head, because you can't help but be genetically like the people you're genetically related to, you know? And like, yeah, it's just such a thing to watch. And so from a very young age to go, well, that's what old men do. And my mistrust of old men, particular types of old men, is still there. It still jumps, you know?
That's... It's very acceptable, Kate, for what you've gone through.
Mm.
What was your relationship like with your mother-in-law?
There was no relationship, I suppose. She's a very cold woman. I don't think I ever actually had a conversation with her. You're just there, and it's just nice day or whatever, and down the house, like a few times over the years, she'd cook a meal and we'd all sit at the table, but it was like, you know, she was royalty and we were just sitting around and she's, you know, doing that. But there was no in-depth anything with her. In actual fact, you know, I think a couple of times I think I felt a bit resented.
When was it that you heard or realised that she knew about what her husband was doing to Kate?
Honestly, don't know, Orla, because I've never spoken to her since. It does annoy me. It does anger me myself that I hired a car. I didn't have a car at the time, and I drove down to Waterford to have the courtesy to tell them both that I thought my marriage was breaking up, and I just wanted them to know it wasn't me, because we were in debt and there was bailiffs coming to the door, there was this, that and the other happening, and I just couldn't take it, and I just wanted them to know. And I'm so mad at that. You know, I was showing them courtesy.
It was almost like a deference, but the thing
and
is...
And I didn't know, you see, this was, you know, a year or so before
you knew
Kate. Yeah.
But you see...
So I haven't spoken to my mother-in-law.
But how did it feel when I told you that? When I told you she knew?
I was trying to think, did she really? Like, I'm not denying that. Don't take that from you. It's because I would see it as myself, like, because people would think she must have known, you know, and I didn't know. So that's where I'd be coming from in my thoughts.
I know, it's just because she witnessed it. Do you know what I mean? Like, she told him to stop, you know, like she I've told you this, I'm sure I have. Mm. When we were having lunch and he would always wait for me. And then she came in and he was kissing me. I couldn't breathe. He sort of lifted me up. And she came in and sort of turned, you know where they put the cutlery in the sideboard there? And then she looked back at him and she said, I told you to stop, or that's enough of that now. Do you know, whatever, it's gone in my head what she said, but it was just those words. And it was like a look between the two of them, and that was the second time she had caught him, you know. And it's like, that's why, do you remember when I was like, found out where she was and we drove down together, and that was mad, do you know what I mean, to drive down. I mean, I speak about it in the pilot episode. It was just this, I found it a very liberating experience, but like, I think I was probably completely high when I came out of I know I was wired when I came out of seeing her, and we went off and get something to eat afterwards.
And what satisfaction did you get from that?
I got to tell her I was abused. I got, as in, she knew I was abused, but I got to go, this did happen, and you walked in. And I never got to do that with my granddad. I didn't see the last time I saw my granddad, I was being made to kiss him by dad. And that's it. And I saw him in a car up in Enniskerry, but he didn't see me. Do you know what I mean? He just was driving past us one time. And there was just something about reclaiming something for me, because it was very instantaneous. Once I found out where she was, I was like, this is the only thing. I'm going down to see her now. And it was to really empower me.
And did it?
Yeah, hugely. And like, you know, because she made the excuse like, oh, well, I didn't really know. And then the more she talked, the more it was like, you, we both know you knew. And then, well, in those days, we didn't understand about abuse. And like, I could have pressed her further and gotten angry and gone, you know damn well your children were probably abused. You know, my aunt's friends wouldn't come over to the house. The stories I've heard. But like, I didn't want to go down that angry route. I wanted to be liberated from something. And I felt like I there's so much power in just saying, this is what happened. And just putting it back where it belongs. Do you know?
Mm.
And then we talked about other things. Do you know what I mean? I remember we talked about you and she was saying stuff that wasn't true and I corrected all of that. And then I left. But like she, I think that my grandparents were used to people treating them as if they were better than everyone else.
Mm.
You were, is it deference is the word?
Mm.
And you were deferential to them. And I see that with you going and saying that to them. Do you know what I mean? Mm. And it's like, but you were like that, as in we were always, like I know you were kind of seen as second class almost. Do you know what I mean? Mm. And even my brothers weren't as important as me. I was the important one because I was the eldest. It was this real kind of patriarchal shite kind of thing. But yeah. But then, like, I suppose I'm thinking about people who will listen to this and I'm thinking about parents who would listen to this. And, you know, you said earlier about, like, how I was, you know, we had really very fractured relationship. We still do. We still have fights and spend a couple of months not speaking to each other and actually can't really remember why exactly that happened. But it's like stuff that's unresolved. But like, I'm sure Mum's looking at me going, I can remember. Mm. I can feel it from her. But like, it was very hard for me as a teenager because obviously you're a teenager and you're going through things. And then I wanted and needed to blame someone. And I couldn't cope with so many things, and you were there and you were easy to blame. Now there was still like, you're just trying to get it right. Do you know what I mean? There's the things that are wrong or right, but it's like I needed to have somebody to blame, and you took that. You've shouldered a lot of stuff.
Yeah, of course you needed somebody to blame, and of course I'm to blame. It's like, that's why,
but you're not to blame for abuse, Mum. Do you know what I mean?
I blame myself for, you know, like, how did I not have seen that? And I'm not saying this by way of, oh, honestly, how did I not see? How could I be so blind? Now, I will make excuses for myself on the basis that, say, by the time you were six and I had Sam as a baby, if we went, you know, you're preoccupied, just like that kind of thing. But that's only an excuse. Mm. I'm saying, you know, like prior to that or at any time, you know, now as an older woman, like, you know, once these things have happened to you, observe people with children, you can observe things and think like, you know, whatever. But I'm not a stupid person. How could I did not see, you know?
I don't think anyone can see. I think that's why Granny is very complicit, because she knew it was happening. But anybody else, it's nobody can see. It could be happening under your nose right now with people you know and you wouldn't have a clue. Do you know what I mean? That's the whole point.
But I also think, Kate, that the whole point too, and if we're thinking about, it is important to listen to your mum, and it's important to respect what Mary is saying.
Mm.
How could I not see?
Mm.
What was going on for me that I didn't see this?
Mm.
Because that's an open wound for your mum.
Mm.
That's something I don't think a parent would get over.
Mm.
You know, that this happened on their watch, and I'm putting in inverted commas.
Mm.
And by God, I don't blame Mary in the least bit, because I'm learning more and more and more about how manipulative paedophiles are, and how they are great at hiding things, and how they fool so many people.
They groom everybody,
and that's the importance of speaking with you today, Mary, and having allowing you, giving you that space to say, how did I not know? For God's sake, how did this happen? And to respect that. And
you're totally right. See, I go into the place of trying to make it better for my mum.
And I see that with you.
But you shouldn't.
I'm saying, like, this is how I think, what I think. I don't... It's nice, but I don't need you to, because that reverts to being a child, and it's not. So you're talking, you know, like I'm talking to two women, and when I say it, it's not things I say is not for someone to make me feel better.
Yes.
It's I'm saying how and why and how. It's just, and then like the fact that you know you were brought down there at my instigation. Do you know, thinking I'm doing you know. My husband loves driving, put the music on in the car, we bring her gorgeous daughter down to his parents because I don't have any. Like, my mother was still alive and living in England, but she was never interested or maternal in that way. But, and yet, there was part of me never liked going down there because it wasn't a welcoming place. Because they're the type of people, like, you know, you asked me about my mother-in-law, she just loves spouting the Latin names of flowers and plants and stuff.
Sorry. Yeah.
Do you know, to show you how much she knows and how, you know, she was above, you know, it's like visiting the Queen. Do you know, like, you know I'm the Queen, so you remember your place, so to speak. You know, you're very cold, like Maggie Thatcher type.
Yeah, person. She did literally spout Latin, and this is the blah, 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 and this is the, and you'd be like standing there as a tiny child going, okay.
I know the other
way. Yeah. Like, and she used to write letters to people, pen pals, and she only wrote in green. And it's like they cultivated this image of being this eccentric, charismatic couple. You know?
She was an accessory to a paedophile.
Yeah. Yeah.
Eccentric and inappropriate as they were, you weren't, you just weren't going there.
And then my memory... It would be that I wouldn't have thought that you would have been out of my sight or out of my immediate area much. Do you know?
But sure.
And then you do relax because, well, it's family members. It's a grandfather or an aunt or whatever. You know what I mean? That you just relax. It's family.
And sure, that's how, like...
What could possibly go wrong?
Exactly. Yeah. But, like, look at the systemic family abuse. That's what we're talking about in the podcast. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, the trust is there. The relaxation is there. It's great as well, I presume, to be able to just let your kid run around and know there's loads of adults there with keeping an eye. Do you know what I mean? And checking in. But, like, it goes back to, as well, there as I got older and... the fact that I instigated, and I say instigated in a I don't know, it always comes loaded for me, but like I say instigated in that I would just want to get it over and done with, so I would call Grandad and go tell him I wanted to show him something and put up in the attic. Do you know? Because if I didn't do that, I wouldn't know when it was going to happen, and I could wake up, I could have gone to sleep, it could be anywhere, and he'd surprise me. And it was much easier to just go, Grandad, I want to show you something, or whatever. And then it was done. And it's taken a lot of energy to understand why I did that. And it was to have control, some sort of control. And it took a long time to not think that I was the problem. I was sick, you know, to have done that. Like, I didn't ever instigate actually anything. I just made sure I got into a room, usually the attic, with him so that it would happen. And then it was over. Do you know what I mean?
And my thoughts, looking back on that, was that, you know, when I'd go up to the bathroom or something, that it was a novelty that a child would like because there was these extra stairs. That was different. And that, you know, kids like up and down and up and down. And like if I was, because I do remember, I think once coming up and you were on the landing with him and it was like playing and you're up and down. You know, so you just know what you know now, what could be done, whatever.
And hopefully this people listening to this are going to, it's going to spark something in people and understanding and question and go, hold on a minute, am I looking at something that I shouldn't be looking at, that's going on that I didn't realise is something. Yeah. And that's the power of speaking openly about it.
Well, I've said to a number of young women that I work with, or in various situations, I've found people, once they have young children, I make no apologies, and I say to them, I make no apologies to say to you, look out for wherever your child is every minute. And that, whether it's, your husband, your father, your father-in-law, an uncle, and it's like, because that's what happened to me. And if I'm able to just say to you, it's a possibility. And it's no reflection on your husband, your father. But I mean, people never think that. It's always somebody else.
Mm.
Do you know?
Mm. I love that you do that.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Mm. Are there any other questions around?
No, just admiration for you both, ladies, to be perfectly honest with you. I think you're a very dynamic duo. You should be very proud of yourselves. It's been incredible to sit here for the last couple of hours and listen to you both speak and see the interaction between the two of you and the great crack that's there and the piss taken out of each other is nice. Keep it up, Mary. Don't let her away with anything.
She doesn't.
Yeah, good.
Wow, Kate, that was so, so powerful. And if I can draw myself back into being there with the two of you, it was incredible. There was a nervous energy, I suppose, at the start when we got to the house. And I think we were all kind of hopping around each other. But it was, I don't want to use the word great, but it was great, and it was lovely, and it was so, I suppose, when we got into it, so calm and peaceful, and to see the two of you interacting together and piecing things together was amazing. And as
I think for me as well, when you say the piecing things together, what's happening more and more with this podcast is we are piecing parts together, because I've only my own story, my own memories. And my mom has more parts of the puzzle and is a part of the puzzle. And very much looking forward to next week's episode, where another part of the puzzle is coming back to talk to us. My friend Jenny from primary school, I got in touch with her, and she has written a letter to me talking about the experience of me telling her about my abuse and how we carry that together. So, and there's loads of little bits in that are another parts of the jigsaw puzzle. So it's pretty powerful, all right. And I think as well, what's been amazing talking to my mum was that sense of being two women, two adult women. I could let go of being a kid in that conversation, and you helped facilitate that. So thank you very much.
So yeah, that's it. So guys, please reach out again. We would love some stories. If there's obviously, if you want us to read out anything, we'll do it anonymously. Mm-hmm. The email is westandpodcast@gmail.com. We're still on the GoFundMe page. It's We Stand Podcast as well. If you could throw a few bob our way, we would really appreciate it. We're nearly at our goal.
If you've been impacted by the stories here that you've heard, you can contact Rape Crisis Centre, 1-800-77-8888, Carry Adult Services, www.carry.ie. And as well, as I said earlier, please contact TUSLA or look for advice if you feel that there is a child at risk. I just want to reiterate, Orla, we would love to hear from you. We stand together. We will do that anonymously. If you don't want us to even talk about that, that's fine. But we would love to hear from you. And if you don't want to email us, we also are on Instagram. We Stand Podcast on Instagram. Until next week, Orla.
Okay, Kate. Take care of yourself.
You too. And thanks everyone for listening.